So maybe you got a great idea for a business and you want to start selling your products or services online. Maybe you're an established business owner looking for new customers, or maybe you're interested in starting a personal website. No matter who you are, GoDaddy wants to help you succeed online. Right now, GoDaddy is offering a .com domain for just $1.49. It's go time. Start your website today. Visit GoDaddy.com and enter promo code Alonzo149 to get your $1.49.com. Some limitations apply. See website for details. Hi, this is Alonzo Bowden, and welcome to episode 93 of my podcast, Who's Paying Attention? I guess I am. Well, we all are, and we all know that the last big story was obviously the homicide of Eric Garner. And I can say homicide because that's what the medical examiner called it, homicide by chokehold. Now, the sad thing is that my last podcast before this was about Michael Brown being killed. And as I've said before, nothing changes if nothing changes. So you can expect there'll be the Tamir Rice podcast. That was a 12-year-old kid with a toy gun who was shot in a park in Cleveland. And then there'll be the John Crawford podcast. That was the man shot carrying a BB gun in the Walmart where you can buy the BB gun. And then there'll be the Akai Gurley podcast. That was a man shot in the stairwell in Brooklyn. And, you know, that's the pattern. That's the pattern. Now, as I said before, nothing changes if nothing changes. And I love when they say you're playing the race card. Hey, Alonzo, you're playing the race card. Even Barack Obama was accused of playing the race card. Well, you know something? When black people keep getting shot by white cops, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and play the race card on this one and say that there's one constant in all of these cases. There's one thing that's the same, and that is the black person killed by the white cop. So I'm going to go with race card on this. Now, the reason I haven't done this podcast sooner, the reason I didn't do it the night the decision came out or the day after, is because if you listen to me, if you read anything, you know that I'm not surprised by any of this. That when people say the system didn't work, I say the system worked exactly as it was designed. The system worked exactly as it was designed. And the police officers in these cases, so far these two cases, got off with no charges being filed and nothing negative on their record or whatever. You know, I don't know. So for me to do the podcast right after the decision and be angry or be surrendered or be sad or whatever, it didn't seem to serve a purpose. So I thought I'd wait and kind of look around and read some news stories and listen to what some people said. And, you know, maybe now's the time. Maybe I have something to say. I've said it before. I'll say it again. I don't think I'm going to say anything revolutionary. I don't have any secret evidence that no one else had, so I'm not going to change it. But this is what I have to say. So, you know, when the decision did come, there was instant commentary, and the commentary ranged from poignant to interesting to heartfelt to utterly ridiculous. And you know, the man who's becoming more and more the go-to man on these kind of things, John Stewart, was very interesting. The Daily Show, the night that the Eric Garner case was, is the word decided or is it thrown out? I don't know how you describe it, but he couldn't be funny. He couldn't say anything. And I thought that said a lot about how America felt. And I will say America or a lot. Of, no, I can't say America because we live in two Americas. I'll say that's how a lot of people felt. And when it comes to funny, one of my comic heroes, Lewis Black, had a tweet that I absolutely loved when he said, I haven't commented on either grand jury case because there aren't enough swear words. So I think we know where Lou stands on this. Now, if you want it funny, you could always just go to Rand Paul, who said that Eric Garner was killed because cigarette taxes are too high. Yeah, because, you know, Eric Garner had been selling loose cigarettes, and Rand Paul said, well, if cigarette tax was lower, then the price of cigarettes would have been lower, then you wouldn't have to buy loose cigarettes, then he wouldn't have been out there, and that's why he was killed. Well, thanks, Rand. That explains that. Now, what is really interesting about the theory of two Americas and how it was covered, again, the right-wing coverage, Fox News, and they had one of their blonde reporters, and I don't know which one it is because they have 20 of them. She said that she was sincerely hoped the protests would not interfere with the lighting of a Christmas tree in Times Square. So we see that, you know, Eric Garner's death was part of the, I guess, part of the war on Christmas. You see, that for him to die in a chokehold was part of the plot to create a protest that would interfere with the lighting of a Christmas tree. See how that works? Part of the war on Christmas. Now, you know, the coverage is always, it's two sides, but a very interesting article I read and a very interesting point of view came from Atlantic Magazine. And I don't know if Atlantic Magazine is necessarily left-wing, but maybe it is. But they said, and it was an interesting article, they said that if Eric Garner was white, his death would be a Tea Party crusade. Now check this out. It's a great, this is a logical line of reasoning, or maybe I'm on the wrong side. Maybe Rand Paul was logical and this is insane. But what they said was, if Eric Garner had been a rural white man, think about it. Eric Garner was a guy who yelled at law enforcement, aka government agents, harassing him, right? And then he was selling cigarettes with no tax on them, you know, individually, which would be similar to Clive and Bundy refusing to pay the government fees for his cattle to graze on government land, right? You see the similarity here? So a sort of civil unrest, a sort of anti-government, a sort of one-man anti-government action. And imagine if government agents had killed Clive and Bundy or any one of these right-wing, quote, heroes standing up to the government. If Eric Garner had been white and had been complaining, had been violating the cigarette tax because it was an unfair tax, and then yelled at government agents not to touch him, stop harassing him, so on, and then was choked to death by federal agents as he said he can't breathe, the Tea Party would be losing their mind right now. Fox News would be losing their mind right now. Ted Cruz and Rand Paul would be making Eric Garner the hero. They'd be leading these marches, much like Al Sharpton is leading the march. You see what I'm saying? This is why I say there's two Americas, because if he had been white, just like this Atlantic Magazine article says, they'd be going crazy for this. And the interesting thing is, and I hate to politicize it, but why the hell not? Because that's what we do. If a Republican was smart, he would jump on board and make Eric Garner some kind of hero, Tea Party hero. And maybe that would get them that black Republican vote, because they need the votes from the three black Republicans. Anyway, very interesting article, very interesting way to look at it. Now, another thing that came out of this as far as commentary, Charles Barkley. Charles Barkley did an interview on CNN, I believe it was, and he talked about the Ferguson verdict, and he talked about, well, verdict, again, decision, let's call them decisions, and he talked about the Garner decision, and he said that the police, you know, he supports, believes, agrees with the police not being charged. He said that without the police in the inner city ghettos or whatever you want to talk about it, that it would be the Wild Wild West. He called the looters scumbags and so on. And he was very pro-cop on this. And believe me, all the conservative papers loved it. And I like Charles Barkley. And I support Charles Barkley. And Charles Barkley is entitled to his opinion. This opinion coming out of Charles Barkley, was it surprising? Well, let me put it this way. Charles Barkley wrote a book called Who's Afraid of a Large Black Man? You know who's afraid of a large black man, Charles? These cops that keep killing them. But anyway, he did this. And in response, Kenny Smith, who's another commentator on Inside the NBA, that's the TNT show that Charles Barkley does about basketball. Kenny Smith wrote an open letter to Charles, and he talked about black people in the struggle and how they feel powerless, and the looters, while wrong, maybe shouldn't be called scumbags because it's the anger bubbling up, and that's what leads to them smashing windows and rioting. And of course, there are opportunist looting and so on. But basically, he responded to Charles, and I'm not going to read both interview and open letter. You can easily Google them and find out. But it's very interesting when you do Google these things, because this is what you see. Of course, there's one that just says Charles says critics can kiss my ass, but that's just Charles responding to the random hatred on Twitter. But when it comes to the talk between Kenny Smith and Charles Barkley, the titles to various articles in Google, Charles Barkley responds to Kenny Smith. Kenny Smith and Charles openly talk about race. Kenny Smith responds to Charles Barkley's comments. All of them basically saying, and imagine if we as a nation could talk, could openly talk, could respond. And then, of course, at the bottom, when you get to the Breitbart.com, their description, Kenny Smith lashes out at broadcast partner Charles Barkley. He lashed out at him. He didn't, really. It was a well constructed, well thought out response to what Charles said, and they both have they're both entitled to their opinion. And speaking of entitled to opinions, I don't see why athletes aren't. I really don't. Now I've knocked people for having opinions about things that they know nothing about. I've done jokes about when models talk, and that's when they're being ridiculous. But this is a case, I mean, if you want to talk about this issue, athletes are supremely qualified to talk about this issue because so many of them are large young black men. And if they weren't pro athletes, and if they didn't have the money and the privilege that goes along with who they are, the celebrity that goes along with who they are, they'd be the guys walking down the street. I mean, can you imagine if these cops are scared of guys like Michael Brown or Eric Garner, who, while large, are certainly not in shape. And unfortunately, Darren Wilson, they do not have the strength of the Incredible Hulk. Imagine pro athletes. I've been in the gym with football players. You cannot comprehend how strong offensive linemen are, literally. I've seen them bench pressing 500 plus pounds repeatedly, even relatively small players. And in the NFL, relatively small 200 to 225 pounds, easily bench pressing over 300 pounds. Basketball players, can you imagine guys of that size just walking around? How scared the cops would be of guys who are 6'6", 6'8", 6'10", 200, 220, 250 pounds? Are you kidding me? Cops would have to shoot them with high-powered rifles from a long distance. So they are truly qualified, in my opinion, to have an opinion on this and to protest. And you may or may not have heard, but Rams players, Jared Cook, Kenny Britt, Stedman Bailey, Chris Givens, and Tavon Aston, they raised their hands in the tunnel. You know, the hands up protest that was common from Ferguson. And they were slammed. Obviously, the police got very upset. We protect the stadium and we protect you, which is bullshit. All right, it's bullshit. The police aren't just, you know, they're not supermen on this. Okay, they do a job. They hang out at the stadium. I would bet as many of them are there watching the game free as there are protecting. Do they provide protection? Yeah. Guess what? That's your job. That's not Superman. That's not going out of your way. That's your job. This is the United States of America. These players are entitled to protest. Now, some people said that they shouldn't protest. One of these guys, and I wish I could remembered which one, but he's been arrested repeatedly for drunk driving. And people said, well, you can't raise your hands against the cops if you've been arrested for drunk driving. Yeah, you can. You can. You have the right to. And now we've got LeBron James and Kyrie Irving and Jared Jett and some of the Nets and Derrick Rose. And there'll be probably quite a few more NBA players wearing T-shirts saying, I can't breathe. And I can't breathe is the protest slogan regarding Eric Garner, because that's what he was saying as a cop was choking him to death. And I'm sure there'll be all kind of flack. But you know something? I admire the NFL for not buckling under this pressure and in any way fining or limiting the speech of their players. And the same with the NBA, because they're entitled to an opinion. They do have the right to have an opinion. So get over it. They're athletes. I'm not looking for their opinion on world affairs. I'm not looking for their opinion on fixing the U.S. economy. But in this issue, as black men, they do have a feeling. They do have a right to protest, and I support them in that. I support them in that. And wow, did I just play the race card again? Listen, if a white athlete wears an I Can't Breathe shirt, he's got the right to do that too. And doubtful, but if one of them came out with a, you know, the police were right, some kind of T-shirt, then he's got the right to wear that. You have the right to disagree on this, absolutely. Now, there's more. And this was very interesting to me. There's a hashtag on Twitter called Criming While White. And this hashtag took off after the Eric Garner case. And it was all kind of examples, mainly white people giving examples of them getting away with sometimes petty, sometimes major crime. Anything from maybe drunk driving or, you know, caught with a little weed, that's marijuana, or, you know, shoplifting, you know, various minor things to some a bit more major, some a bit more major were involved in accidents or fights or, you know, something like that. And they wrote that the cops let them off and they were allowed to go. And I didn't really get Criming While White because I was kind of like, well, I get what you're saying, but I don't understand how you're helping by telling us that white people get away with crimes, that black people get beaten or go to jail or shot or whatever. Over until I read a tweet from a woman named, and I want to get this right, Laura Burns. And what Laura Burns wrote was that Criming While White was an example of being treated as humans, and everyone deserves to be treated like a human. And that was just such a great explanation of what the point was. And I'm going to read the tweet. She said, Criming While White is really trying to say, we got away with being imperfect because authority treated us as humans. We want that for all humans. And that's very simple. And what a simple way to sum up what all these protests are about, what all this anger and frustration is about. To be treated as humans. That's all that we're asking. Not to be treated as Hulk or a danger or something that must be immediately shot or put down or... And you know, the beauty of this, the Laura Burns, who is a white woman, who tweeted about this, and not all conservatives were on the side of the cops. Interestingly, George W. Bush, said that they were wrong in this decision. This is about humans, and this is about humanity, and this is about, we got a real problem with a shoot first, ask questions later. And those questions are very... select questions designed to end anything in the grand jury before it goes to trial. So I think that's great. I'm sorry I'm not getting into anything else on this particular podcast, but I just wanted to talk about what I've read and what I've heard. And the other thing I want to bring up is a brilliant article that was sent to me. And sorry, I'm looking it up right now. And, you know, I'm not the most computer literate guy. Speaking of not being very computer literate and computers, my iPod died after years. I had the old school iPod and it died. And you know your iPod's old when you get to the Apple store and they look at it and they say, wow, that's not a good response. anyway, I was sent an article and it was an education for me. And it's called, it's titled, Most of You Have No Idea What Martin Luther King Actually Did. It was written by Hamden Rice. And Hamden Rice, very, I'm going to read you excerpts from this, a bit of context of who he is. But you need to look this up because it really is just a brilliant essay and very moving. But Hamden Rice said, he started out, I remember many years ago when I was a smart ass home from my first year of college, I was standing in the kitchen arguing with my father. We can all pretty much relate to that. You didn't even have to go to college to be a smart ass arguing with your father when you're about 18 or 19. I argued with my dad when I was 17 and at 18 moved out. Imagine that. Anyway, he said his father was from a background in rural Virginia. His parents had been tobacco farmers, and this would they lived in a valley or a hollow or holler, as it was called. And, you know, it was they were poor. No running water, no gas, wood burning stove, an outhouse, giant wood pile, blah, blah, blah. And I can relate to this. I remember when my grandmother and grandfather had a similar house, but they didn't have indoor plumbing. They had an outhouse. It was when I was really a little kid. Then they built a new house that was better. But I think a lot of black people can relate to this one or two generations back living like this. And he says, I think we were kind of typical as African Americans in the pre-civil rights era. So he's having an argument with his father about Martin Luther King and how Martin Luther King's message was too conservative compared to Malcolm X's message. And you'll hear this a lot, that a lot of people think Malcolm X was much more militant and angry, and Martin Luther King's message of nonviolence was too conservative and too gentle, et cetera, et cetera. And then he goes on to write, I was kind of sarcastic and asked something like, so what did Martin Luther King accomplish other than giving his I Have a Dream speech? Now, this is where I was educated. I was schooled right here, okay, because this is how his father responded. And again, I'm skipping through this article and paraphrasing, but what his father said is, Martin Luther King, the great thing that Martin Luther King accomplished, he ended the terror of living as a black person, especially in the South. That's a key word. He ended the terror. It was terrorism against black people. And his father went on to say, it wasn't that black people had to use a separate drinking fountain or couldn't sit at lunch counters or had to sit in the back of the bus. Sure, that's what went on. And he says, this is his father talking about lunch counters and buses were symbolic planes of struggle. But white people, and this is his father talking about this time, and this is pre-civil rights, and we've seen this, but I can't, fortunately, I can't imagine living this, but this was the truth. He said, white people, mostly white men, occasionally went berserk, and they grabbed random black people, usually black men, and they lynched them. Now, we all know about lynching, but you may or may not have known about this, but beatings, because black people couldn't fight back. If a white man hit you in the street, you couldn't fight back. You couldn't fight back. It was illegal for you to hit him back. And they would put black people on trial for crimes. You know, assault could mean actual assault, but it could mean just eyeballing a white woman. You know, reckless eyeballing. That was a crime. And Black people had to live with this, and it was terror. And you were somewhat, you may not have been scared, you were at the very least nervous or aware that this might happen. Think about how people, a lot of people live now with this fear of terrorism, especially like after 9/11, when people were afraid it could happen again. Now, imagine a race of people in the United States living like that all the time. That was being Black in the South prior to civil rights era, prior to Martin Luther King. And what Martin Luther King did, what he said Martin Luther King did, was Martin Luther King and he talks about James Farmer, who was the founder of CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality, another leader in nonviolent resistance. This is his father. He said, they told us, whatever you're most afraid of doing with white people, go do it. Go down to City Hall and try to register to vote. Go to that lunch counter. Sue the local school board for equal schooling. All things that Black people would have said were insane and would get you killed. And they said, if we all do it together, we'll be okay. And Martin Luther King literally trained. They literally taught Black people how to take a beating from the cops, to how to handle the dogs attacking you, how to take the fire hoses, how to protect your head with your arms, and so on. And what happened was when the white people did this, when the white cops did this, and they threw these Black people in jail, the Black people would start singing. They'd start singing freedom songs. And over time, the Black people learned that the worst the white people could do to them was survivable. And white people learned that the worst that they treated the Black people wouldn't break their spirits. And they stopped doing it. And that's what Martin Luther King did. He took away that element of terror. Now, he did a lot more with the I Have a Dream speech and so on and so forth. But imagine, he took away that element of terror. And I think right now, We need to do that with these police. We need to let these police know that you're wrong. And even if the grand jury says it's okay, we will not stand for this anymore. And it's, you know, I don't know the solution. I think the marches and the solidarity are sending a message. Hopefully the federal government will step in and be able to do something, but it's going to be difficult. Certainly in the Eric Garner case, the city of New York is going to be paying out a lot of money. I have no doubt about that. But what an article about Martin Luther King. And once again, it's called, the essay is called Most of You Have No Idea What Martin Luther King Actually Did, written by Hamden Rice. And I highly recommend it. Now, I'm going to close by telling you that last week, Wednesday night, I had the privilege, and it was an absolute privilege, to host the awards dinner. It's called Above and Beyond. It was in Detroit, and it was awards for their first responders. And these were true heroes. And when I say heroes, I don't mean in the sense that we just say, you know, all military are heroes, all firemen. No, these are people, these were firemen and police who actually did run into burning buildings, who actually did reach into cars that were flipped over and on fire and pulled people out, that actually did face gunfire, bullets coming at them, and challenge that and stop the criminal. These were real heroes. These were amazing, amazing police and firemen. And it was fun to do this event. I got to joke around with the Detroit chief of police, with James Craig, who's a great guy. And the important thing was, the thing I want to remind everybody is, and tell people, not all cops are bad. The vast majority of them are good. The vast majority of police are good people. They're struggling. It's a tough job. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do that job. But that's why I don't do that job. And a lot of people shouldn't be doing that job, and we hope they get them out of that job. But anyway, these were first responders, and these were heroes, and these were good cops. And it's a damn shame. It's a damn shame that the cowardly cops so easily ruin the reputation of these heroic cops. Let's do something about the cowards. Let's get rid of them. If you're scared of black people, you should not be a cop. If you're scared of Mexicans, you should not be a cop. If you're a bully who picks on defenseless people because you can, you should not be a cop. And if you're a good cop, as tough as it is, maybe it's time you took a stand to protect your reputation and your police department and helped us to get rid of these bad cops, because as you can see, we can do nothing about them from the outside looking in. So that's it. That's Who's Paying Attention, episode 93. Man, I hope I don't have to do this again. I joked about it. I talked about it. I don't want to do any more of these podcasts. I want to go back to laughing at crazy Republicans and joking about the war on Christmas. And you know, I read an article that the scooters, little Razor scooters, are the most dangerous thing in the world for kids. You know, meanwhile, kids are sitting back at video games weighing 250 pounds when they're 12. But a Razor scooter is dangerous because you might fall down as a child, scrape a knee, or I hate to say it, even break an arm. It's bad, but if you're a kid, it's part of growing up. But that's where I want to be with this podcast. I want to talk, I want to make fun of Sarah Palin again. I want to lighten up. So thank you for paying attention, and thank you, America, for caring and protesting and talking and man talking. If only the two sides could talk on a more powerful level. If only a conservative politician could talk to a liberal politician about the issue of race instead of denying that racism exists. And if only they could listen to Barack Obama as president and as a black man without saying, I hate Obama, so everything he says is wrong, then maybe we'd move forward. Maybe if the nation got to the level of Kenny Smith and Charles Barkley, who can disagree but sit next to each other, work together, and actually laugh at shit. Mainly Shaquille O'Neal, which, you know, is Shaq is funny. So anyway, I love you guys. This is my podcast, Who's Paying Attention. My next road gig, December 18th through 21st, right before Christmas, I will be at Charlie Goodnight's in North Carolina. Thank you for listening. I'm Alonzo Bowden, wishing you all the best and a happy holidays. I just say happy holidays because it tweaks spots just a little. Thank you.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schleichinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.